Welcome to the Making a Runner podcast. I'm your host, Nick, a running specialist, biokineticist, and coach.
And I'm a co-host, Davey, aka Davey on the Run.
Through our shared knowledge and experience, we unpack the fascinating topic of running.
We speak to coaches, athletes, subject matter experts, and everyday enthusiasts to help you improve your running.
And ensure that you enjoy every step of the way, wherever the road or trail may take you.
This is how runners are made.
It's how runners are made, baby.
Oh yeah.
If you're running to oceans and you put in the work, you know the sacrifices you did for it. If you're elite, if you're amateur, if you're just going there to finish the race. It was weekends that you put out and planned out to do your half marathon training, do your marathon training, do your ultra, get your ultra distances in that you had to qualify for. Remember that when you're running. It's the sacrifices that you put in for that race. Use it as your motivation on the day to smash your PB.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Making a Runner. Today we have a fantastic conversation to bring through to you with the one and only Yvette Van Zyl. Yvette Van Zyl is one that is very close to both myself and Davey. And as you can hear, Davey is not on this intro. Unfortunately, we had a bit of a problem with our intro recording, so he will be on the podcast, but we had some issues with the sound on his end as well as on Yvette's sound end. Unfortunately, for the first 2 or 3 minutes of the conversation, you will hear that her sound is a little bit muffled, but I do promise that it does get better, and then you can actually hear her conversation really, really well. The important thing to note is that it's a very authentic conversation. You know, we chat about two oceans as a whole. We chat about it from a 56 kilometer perspective, on the 21 kilometer perspective. Yvette has run both races. She has won a couple of the 21s. She has podiumed on the 56. She is hoping to be winning the 56. So she really is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to two oceans. And I just want to say from our end, you know, we are navigating a couple of changes with Davey's move. I myself am talking to you from Italy right now, trying to navigate the quality of our audio. It is something that is very much top of our priority, and we want to ensure our listeners that we are working on it. So please just bear with us through this time of change. You'll also hear that in this podcast, there are a couple of moments where perhaps Davey's sound is not sounding as good as it should, and Yvette does shout at her dogs 1 or 2 times. So that is all part of the conversation, it adds to it, and I really hope that you guys enjoy this wonderful insight into two oceans. If you find that you would like to have more information on two oceans, I would like to guide you guys back through our episodes from January through to April 2023, where we unpacked a 6-episode series on two oceans. We covered all the details of how to train, how to race, how to pace yourself on race day, what to do from a nutritional perspective, how to get your mindset right, and how to ace your race day. And you'll remember, with that perspective in mind, we chatted to Yvette Van Zyl, so that's why we thought that Yvette would be the one to take us through today. So I really hope that from Making a Runner, from myself, Davey, and Leah, we really wish that you guys have a fantastic race and that you get a lot of insight from this next hour of conversation, and it can help you guide you to the best day out at two oceans. But that's enough from me today. Here is Yvette Van Zyl.
Yvette Van Zyl, we are so excited to be chatting to you again. As I was saying to you off air, this is the first time that Davey and I are going to be in two different rooms talking to a guest that's in a different room as well. So I think we're covering KZN, Western Province, Gauteng today. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm excited for this 3-in-1 conversation and yeah, just happy to be on this show again and to chat to you too.
Thanks, Yvette. Davey, what have you got to say? I know we're going to be talking about two oceans today, and I think it's time to announce the fact that you're not going to be taking part in this year's two oceans ultramarathon.
Sorry, Nick, I didn't hear any of that.
Oh.
No, I'm just joking. Hello. Hello, Yvette. so good to be talking to you again from the moon. It's always nice to chat to Yvette. Yvette is one of my favorite guests. And yeah, I'm super excited to see you smash two oceans. Obviously, you've gone through the thick of it with this training block. I'm looking forward to hearing all about that and supporting you en route. I'm not going to be taking part, obviously, but Yvette actually tried to recruit me as her number one seconder. But then her manager decided that I couldn't be in 20 different places at once. So he said no.
I think he saw the way that you ride your bike and he was like, no, this guy can't be trusted.
Yeah, probably.
Well, I'm very disappointed. It would have been nice to have Davey have my seconder, but it's okay. I'm bringing Alja in as well, but he's probably going to follow Davey. So then he's not also the greatest seconder.
Well, Yvette, it's super exciting that you're going to be lining up and racing again, because last year, believe it or not, it's already been a year, we did a 6-episode series covering the Total Sports Two Oceans Marathon, and Yvette was the icing on top of the cake. She was the final episode, and we strongly recommend you guys going back. We do dive quite deeply into all the elements of the Two Oceans between February and April last year, but Yvette's last episode was on how to ace your race, and as much as she had wonderful insight for the upcoming event, she unfortunately wasn't going to be lining up after a second place the previous year. But this year, after a comeback year of note, Yvette has been smashing marathons, has been smashing her goals, and she's making a comeback to Two Oceans. So how do you feel about it, Yvette?
Yeah, thinking back to last year, I was not acing the race, but acing an injury. But coming into this year, I'm very excited. It has been it has been a different kind of year so far. But it's been interesting and I've been loving the training. I've changed the training quite up a bit. I've been experiencing with the training what I will be doing or did already last year before Two Ocean Marathon. So it's working Two Ocean Marathon. So you're going into Two Oceans. I'm confident but scared, of course, because it's always the distance always scares everyone. Now, if I'm going to Instagram and so on, and I see people getting nervous for the 56, I'm like, I'm in the same boat. I feel the same way. And people, like runners, saying they don't think they did enough. It's like, even if you're a deep runner, you always feel like you're not doing enough. But you have to reassure yourself that what you did is enough, because we're moving into the few days that the countdown begins. And yeah, it's just like reassuring yourself the work is done, and I'm excited to be part of the race this year and just be the best that I can be. And
Yvette, to say that, I think, you know, let's backtrack a little bit, because obviously you've been coming back from injury, and we all know that injury can be such a bugger. I mean, I don't have to say it. Davey knows what it's like. You as an athlete, you've been coming back for a while now, but it seems like things are lining up quite well for you as it is. I mean, you run a couple of strong marathons, you run an Olympic qualifier at the stage, you're still going to the Olympics, which is hell of an exciting. And obviously Two Oceans is a race that in 2022, if we jog our memory back to that, it was one that you had in your pocket coming down Constantia, the back end of Constantia. You thought you had this race, and it was a crushing takeaway from you by Gerda, and I'm sure that you're so excited to just go back to that race. But we're going to get talking into more details of how to race Two Oceans and how to make sure that you do finish the strongest that you possibly can. But to go back to the point that you were saying, the fact that it is 56, you know, and it is just that little bit longer than marathon distance. Personally, it's one of the reasons why I didn't re-sign up for Two Oceans this year. I know Davey was braver than me. He went right ahead and he was going to run it. I was emotionally and physically scarred from that last little bit last year, just because essentially the effort is no different to the effort that you're putting out on a marathon, but you're going for an extra 14Ks and that hurts so much. And the fact that those hills are stacked towards the end of the race just makes it so difficult. So let's start there. What would be your advice for runners that are perhaps doing their first Two Oceans, or runners that that are like me, mentally and physically scarred from having done a race like this before and not really knowing how to handle that expectation of going that much further?
Firstly, I would say, now being at the back end as well, it really hurts being sidelined more than racing the race. I would say in 2019, the race broke me completely. I died off the marathon, and we were going over Kopsavach, and that killed me completely. And I swear it myself, I would never go back. But standing at the airport, I couldn't walk yet, but decided now I have to go back because I can't end it this way that I did. And then we had the whole break, and then 2022 happened. Yeah, I did it the other day. I did a conversation about it, and they're like, but if Gerda wasn't there, you would have made history. I'm like, yeah, but Gerda was there. So that doesn't make sense at all. But yeah, it was quite a tough one to swallow. But how to race, yeah, it's definitely respect the distance. I think that's firstly, you have to respect the distance because it's not a marathon, it's a 56. And it is a different kind of challenging route with, after the marathon, you're actually doing the most challenging part of the route. And yeah, must I close the door? My dogs are fighting downstairs, sorry.
That's okay, it adds.
I'm just going to close the door. Pause it. Okay.
It adds to the authenticity, don't worry.
No, we're going to keep this one rolling a bit. Everyone wants to hear Vos Evet, eh? I think that's what happened. Why didn't you say those words to Gerda when she came past you? She would have slowed right down.
Yeah, I'm going to scream at Gerda when she passes me this year. I'm going to say, no, Gerda, no, down.
So you were telling us about the managing your race and managing that extra distance. Now, if you're someone that hasn't run Two Oceans before, let's start there. So perhaps let's set the scene. Two Oceans is one of those great ultra marathons around the world, Africa's largest ultra marathon, and you know it's 56 k's of pretty grueling terrain. I mean, if you look at the actual route profile, it looks like it's a dawdle for 30 kilometers. And then it really, there's a couple of hills that if you don't know, you don't know. But on race day, they really do hurt you. So let's start there. Two Oceans as a race. If you've got an athlete that comes to you a bit and wants to know, what is the first thing that I need to know about Two Oceans? Where would you start with that?
Well, I would start at the start line. Yeah, just make sure you have gone to the toilet because a 56K is really long. And just make sure you have enough fueling as well with you, your gels that you want to take, and you had to practice for them. And then going into the first 22K, it's quite flat, it's dark, it's breezy, it's not that hot, you feel good. And that is, I think, where most runners make the mistakes, is they think it's an easy course when they run the first 22. And then when you dry at Komiki, it's like turn. Sorry. Then it starts to change. There's a lot of houses you go through, yeah, and then you start at Noordhoek.
Noordhoek
is, for me personally, that's one of the hardest hills. Chappies is nice because there's scenery as well, and then it starts to get light, and it's just nice running up Chappies. And then going down Chappies, most people also make the mistake of going too fast because you get like a 5K downhill and they think they have to smash their PBs down and get that Strava kudos of that crowns that they want. So not going too fast down Chappies. That will be great advice for yourself if you're running and just thinking about that while you're like gunning down, just seeing the sea. And yeah, don't get too overly excited there because then you hit Hope Bay, and Hope Bay, they call like Bruce Fordyce calls it like the cemetery because it feels like your legs are dead. So it really hits you hard in Hope Bay, and then the hard part doesn't even start yet. So then at just after marathon, you start climbing Constantia. Now, Constantia is the highest point of the whole race when you get to Constantia's neck. So that is the most brutal hill you'll find. But the torture isn't over when you have like reached the top, because then you have like a little bit downhill, then you climb up again, and then you have that bad curves that if you didn't start cramping yet, you will. But yeah, it's advisable to just get the top points of it. Just do not run the shortest route, but rather opt for going a bit off the road and just trying to not hit the curves that bad. Yeah, and then the hard part is that downhill you get again, but then you have nothing left in the tank. So then you can just like survive on whatever energy you have left. And then, of course, that last rolling hills that you have 3Ks long and then get past Bajada. Kidding.
Well, if you're getting past Bajada on race day, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, so my advice is when somebody passes you, try and go with them. That would be my best advice, to not just going to second gear, but try another gear and just fight till the end, because then you're almost home and then you're almost going to hit the grass. So just find that last bit of energy on that last 3Ks to finish up the race. But it's the most, if I compare like the half marathon to the ultra, I'll never go back to the half, because the half isn't nearly as nice as the ultra. The ultra is tough, but you'll never feel as proud of yourself as what you did when you crossed that finish line. Doesn't matter if you had a good race, a bad race. Trust me, you will come back either way.
And I think that there's a lot of people that are listening to this and are perhaps doing the 21. And now I've heard you say that, and next year they're going to be gunning for that 56. But I think just listening to you and hearing that route again, it's reminding me yet again why it is such a challenging route to go run and go and race, because of that difference. And the first half just feels so easy, and before you know it gets really, really tough. And I just want to touch on a point that you mentioned right at the start. You said, you know, make sure that you have enough fuel on you and or with you, because it is quite a difficult race for your seconders to get into places to give you things and to meet you. Davey and I were fortunate enough that we had our wives meeting us at Noorduk, and that generally I feel is the best place, because they can just go over Okhopse Weg and meet you there, and it is about where the race almost starts to get tough. But I want to ask Davey to bring him into here. Davey, you and I ran that race last year, 2023. We ran together for about 20 kilometers, and then obviously we didn't see each other again thereafter until the finish. Where did you find your race started to get difficult? We know Yvette says that first hill out of Noorduk, so like sort of little chappies you're talking, Yvette.
Yes, little chappies.
Okay, so but I just want to also quickly add in there, Nick, the reason why we didn't continue to run together is because there's a secret time, guys, where you have the perfect opportunity to take a strategic bathroom break. And I believe it was in Fishhook.
Just before Fishhook, there's a bush as you come into the right hand side. That's the spot.
Just before Fishhook. So it gets a bit tricky, I won't lie, because it's a very residential area. But if you look hard enough, you might find an opening, and you might also take a poo on the side of the road, just where Nick did, and that also might just save your race. So if you are, within the first, I think what, Nick, 20Ks on the race, because I think it is about 20Ks to push up there. Yeah, and if you really need the bathroom, and if you're chasing that silver medal, and now you're wondering, do I have time? Don't I have time? Nick is living proof that if you want to take a break for a number two, you can do it, but you've got to make fast, guys. And that doesn't mean looking for toilet paper or anything. That means using your clothing or a friend's clothing. So that's just arm sleeve, one thing that I wanted to put out there.
A friend's arm sleeve.
Okay, yeah. So I think for me, the challenging parts of the race, and I've had a few people reach out to me asking, for tips and advice, because it's quite a hard race to get right. And I'm speaking specifically to people who are, perhaps chasing a silver. Obviously, there's lots of different times that you can be going for, and the race will be different for a lot of athletes out there. But for me, it was challenging in the beginning. For one aspect is because of the lack of light. It starts in the dark. And last year when Nick and I started, it was pitch black. And I think that was a combination of load shedding. I'm not too sure, or if there are actually just no lights on that street. But a piece of advice that I would give to athletes out there is maybe take a cheap little headlamp or something that you can use just to watch those footsteps whilst you're going along, because there are also quite a few, you know, ditches in that road, on main road there as it goes out. And then for me, Chappies was also quite a challenge. I know a lot of people say Chappies isn't that difficult, but it's a windy hill, and it can be quite intimidating when you look at like how long it actually is. And then just like Yvette said, going down Chappies, really take caution there, because it is a real challenge and you're going to be feeling it there, and you don't want to be going too fast. You are going to perhaps injure yourself. But by far the biggest challenge, in my opinion, is definitely Constantia Neck. That is a absolute brutal part of the race, just after 42 Ks. And the only piece of advice I have is just don't walk. Just do not walk up that hill. If you are chasing that silver medal, just keep going. Obviously, if your time is dependent and you're just trying to finish or go for a slower time, then definitely strategically walk up that hill. But for those chasing a silver medal, please just know that hill will swallow you in, and you will take one walk and you will not be able to get going again.
Yeah, Davey, it is quite a steep hill, but I think if you have in your race plan a bit of a run-walk strategy up, especially the steep part of Constantia, because it's a long hill. It's like 4 or 5 Ks, if I'm correct of it, but it's the steep part comes almost right at the top of it, and it's brutal. I do think that if you've managed yourself throughout the run, so if you get through that 42 kilometer mark feeling pretty good, then you should be able to run up Constantia Neck. But if you are feeling a bit broken, you also need to know that once you get to the top of Constantia Neck, you can run pretty much all the way to the finish.
Yeah.
So if you know that you're going to be just spending your last little bit going up Constantia Neck, then I would recommend walking up Constantia Neck if that means that you're going to be able to run that last little 10 Ks, because 10 Ks is still a long way. And if your legs are done, then there's no coming back. And I know that you say, you know, you're talking particular to silver and it's difficult, but I think it's difficult for any level of runner just because of the way that the route profile is stacked on the back end. You know, you get falsely sucked into feeling good, and then you end up suffering quite a lot. And once your legs go, we all know how much time you'll end up losing. So I think for me, the key to mastering the Two Oceans route is really about being quite disciplined until you get to Noorduk, and trying to almost hold back a little bit. Feel like you should be feeling like this is feeling very easy. Like it should be feeling that way, because before you know it is quite tough. And for someone that is even first time or someone going back to Two Oceans, how should you sort of set your sights on a specific goals? How do you know whether you should be able to go for a silver, or you should be going for a 5 hour, 6 hour, or just a finisher?
I think look at your training, what you have done. That is the most important. If you know you've not done enough, just go for like the limit. Don't go for like PBs or something. Just go for a finish and just time yourself like to make it into the cutoff time. But if you have trained and you know you've done the work, I think you must go look at the route, and especially the first 22, where you can make up time but not overspend all your money that you actually have in the bag. And just see there that you can go in moderation, stay as long as possible comfortable, that you can, when the heels come, have enough energy to just work them through. We don't, like me as a runner, we don't run the heels that hard. We make up time at the beginning of the race, at first 22. The heels, we actually try and conserve our energy and not spend too much of what we have left in the tank, that we can use that, especially after the marathon. You have to have enough energy still, because like in any race, they tell you in the marathon, the race starts after 32K. Well, in the 56, the race starts just before you hit Constantia. So it is just after the marathon, then the race actually starts. So if you're already there bombed, you know you're going to have a really tough 14Ks left. So reserve rather your energy until you hit the marathon, and then from there, whatever you have left, if you reach Constantia Neck at the top, then you can like spend the money that you have left. But saving is better than spending everything at the beginning.
Yeah, I bet Davey likes to utilize his credit card when he races. Hey, he doesn't even go into savings. He just goes straight into debt from the start.
He just steps. No pen needed.
I'm looking for those e-bucks, that's why.
You're looking you're always looking for a deal, Davey. But Yvette, you're talking about managing your energy. So, you know, when you're talking energy, we always talking fueling. And you mentioned like you just make sure that you do have enough fuel on yourself to run the race, or if you're lucky enough to have someone second you or someone that can meet you en route and hand you stuff. I mean, we're talking about this from a racing perspective. There are water points as you go along. I mean, if you're a first time runner of an ultra marathon, there's water points pretty frequently. I mean, every 3-4 kilometers, you're going to find water points where you'll be able to get some juice. You'll be able to get your Coke. You might be able to get something more. And the Two Oceans Marathon has got quite nice water points compared to like your regular marathons. It's sort of one of those premier marathons. So you might even be able to get something to eat as you're going along. So it's really well organized. So you don't have to be worrying now listening to this thinking, shit, am I going to carry enough food for 56 Ks? Because that is a big concern as well. You know, if you're someone that's just doing 21k a marathon, it's a lot easier to carry enough food for that. But the 56, you have to carry a lot, so you have to manage that. And I think, you know, I want to hear from you in terms of like the advice that you give your athletes from a nutritional perspective. Now, bearing in mind that, you know, you're an elite level runner, your circumstances are different when it comes to race day. But what would be your advice for your regular individual going to run the 56 from a nutritional side point?
Like for me, I'll always make sure every 35 to 40 minutes I take in enough carbs. My carbs is already in my gel, so it helps me that I have enough energy to use for the next 35 or 40 minutes. So for any athlete, I think you have to make sure that you have it, because there's a lot of athletes that can't eat before they run. It makes them nauseous or their stomachs upset. So they have to have enough carbs while they're running. So taking in and making sure that you have trained with gels, or you don't need to take a lot of gel. Just make sure the gels that you take is efficient enough for the run that you're going to do, because you are going to burn a lot of calories while you're running, and you have to put it back while you're running. Otherwise, you're going to hit the wall sooner. Mm-hmm. So then you're not even going to make Constantia Neck before you hit the wall, depending on where you spend your money or not. So I would say every 35 to 40 minutes, take in enough nutrition, like carbs. If you're used to running and eating, you can take in a half a banana every hour. It's depending on how long your race is going to be. But you have to at least every 35 to 40 minutes, I would say, make sure you take in enough. Like if your gel has 40 grams of carbs, take that in for that 40 minutes duration, and then another 40 minutes, time yourself that you have, and take it in with water. When you take in a gel, don't just pop it in and don't take water, because sometimes it just goes sits in your stomach and it doesn't work. Then you end up having stomach cramps because your gel is just goes in your stomach and not dissolving. So it's important to take in water with your gel, and just make sure if you take something on the road, Coke or anything other, because my godmother, she is, I must say, she is for me a legend. She's now, I think, 67, and she still runs every weekend. But for her, she never eats before a run. She only takes in Coke in a race, and that is how she won Comrades in 92. She just took Coke, and she did only drink coffee before she ran. So that is her nutrition. What she did. So it doesn't have to be fancy. If you're used to it, continue with it. You can run on Coke as well. There's nothing wrong with Coke. I enjoy a Coke as well. But I just need to run faster. It's not going to help me run faster. But I'm just saying, if you're going into the race and you only have drank Coke, or it's okay. You can use it on race day as well. They're at the water points are Coke. Take it in. But just make sure you take in something more than if you're running like 4.5 hours or 3 hours. Just make sure, or 3.5, 4, 5. Make sure you're taking enough carbs for the use that duration. You are doing your work with.
I think it's such an important point that you mention of it, because I think a lot of people, first of all, they don't know how much grams of carb are in their gels that they take. So they might think they're taking 40 gram gels or 60 gram gels, but meanwhile, they look at the back of it, actually only 20. So now they're severely underfueling. And the second problem that I want to mention on that is that a lot of people haven't run at that intensity for that long. So when they're doing their training runs, they are running at a slower intensity. So your body uses less energy, so you can get away with eating less. But on race day, you end up pushing yourself quite hard and you're still eating like you would on your normal slow long runs. And then guess what? When you hit that marathon mark, you're going to have no legs left. So it's important to manage your expectations on race day. And would you say from the start, so you're saying the first 30, the first 40 minutes, that's when you're starting your gels, and you would recommend that for people as well?
Yes, definitely, because most people wait until they're thirsty and then it's too late.
Yes.
If you're thirsty already, you have waited too long. So start early on. It's going to be cool. It's not, you're not going to need to take it in, but you're going to thank me for later if you hit the marathon that you took it. So yeah, just be prepared and take early on. Just keep, but don't overtake. Don't like take too much in that your stomach starts like bobbing around before halfway. That's not the way to go, but taking just a little bit, even if you don't feel like it, a little moderation also will help you a long way when you hit that marathon mark. But yeah, fueling is quite important. If you're an amateur runner, if you're an elite runner, I would say that is the make or break if you're gonna like hit the wall before Constantia or get over the wall at Constantia.
I mean, a lot of people are quite surprised when, so talking about gels, and I mean, the rule of thumb sort of for me, for any runner, would be try and take at least 60 grams of carbs every single hour. So, I mean, it's quite simple. That's 20 grams or one gel every 20 minutes. But if you start doing the math on that, if you're doing a 5 hour or if you're going for 5 hours, what, that's 15 gels, I think it is. And
you do the math for us.
Correct? Is my math correct there?
Yes.
So it's 3 times 5, 15 gels. So 15 gels, and now we're talking about being self-supported. I mean, you know, some people will be taking 3, 4, 5 gels on them for the entirety of the race, and they'll think that that's adequate. But, you know, not only is nutrition really important for not hitting the wall and stuff like that, but also just recovery. I found that taking nutrition and the amount of time that you save, you know, post-race in terms of recovering quicker and getting back into running sooner, which is super important for elite athletes, but also important for amateur athletes and everyday runners like ourselves who don't want to feel like we've been hit by a car and, you know, out of running for 3 or 4 weeks. But I remember, Yvette, you telling me something very interesting about your form of carbo load. Obviously, you know, Nick and I do enjoy a carbo load about 2 to 3 days before a race. But tell us about how you fuel, you know, before a race and what the lead up to a race like Two Oceans is.
Yeah, so going into a marathon and ultra, I don't look forward to it, because then I take carbs away before a week before the time. I take carbs away, eat no carbs, and that means no sugar. And I love sugar. I like my desserts. I'm not on a sugar-free diet. I do like and I take a lot of sugar. And for 3 days, I don't take in carbs then. I deplete it and only take in protein. And then 3 days before the race, I start loading up carbs again. And devouring it. And yeah, it feels like it really helps for the ultras. It's a old thing that my godmother used to use. So it comes really all the way back from the 1990s. Yeah, that they use it because they didn't have any fancy, like gels or anything. So they use that. But I can really feel a benefit every time that I do it. It's just in that state that I don't use carbs. I'm quite depleted and I can't, in that state, you have to be in taper mode because you can't do hard sessions. You are so tired and you have no energy. So it really, the first time I did it, it freaked me out a bit because I thought, oh my word, my shape is deteriorating. But then when I started adding it again, is as the rush just comes back and you feel the immediate change then again. So then when you run the race, you can go quicker in your glucose stores and get those carbs that you need because now you have stacked it up with protein and fat for 3 days and no carbs. And then you put the carbs back again. And then it's as if your system just gels better on race day that it can use your fuel much better. I would not advise it for first time runners to try it on race day. I won't advise. I would rather let them try it like in a training run and build it up from there. But it doesn't work for everyone. Like there are runners that doesn't like it and it does not work. So it's depending on how your body adapts to it and how it takes to it because some people can have opposite effect. So for me, it works. And for other athletes that I also know works for, but it's not for everyone.
Yeah, I think you mentioned such an important point there with regards to it being individual for everyone. And I think, you know, when it comes to the recommendations on race day from a pacing strategy or like we can say you got to take it easy and then save your legs, like that should apply to everyone. But when it comes to nutrition, it really is individual. And that term of, you know, you should never be trying something new before race day is truly important at this stage. And we have to prioritize that. But to just touch on two things that both Davey said and then you mentioned, that the first one was, you know, there's a lot of runners that perhaps Two Oceans is just a stepping stone to another race, like the Comrades. And then obviously your race day looks completely different or should look completely different. Some people choose to race both. I know personally that if I tried to race Comrades last year, I wouldn't have recovered fast enough because Oceans took it out of me, whereas Davey raced both Oceans and Comrades and did fairly well in both those races. So I guess, again, that's an individual point, but... Well, you're laughing, Davey, but you were your own demise at Comrades, my boy. You were your own demise. Don't blame your legs. I want to just... Yeah, so from an advice perspective of it, what do you say to your athletes that are wanting to either race both? I mean, I know that as an elite level athlete, very likely those are your biggest races in your calendar year in terms of ultramarathon. You are going to race both. But as a regular athlete, I mean, it does take quite a lot out of you. Even if you pace yourself well, if you eat correctly, what would you recommend in terms of after the ultra? What would you do from a recovery perspective, and sort of what is your time frame to get back to doing that high mileage for something like the Comrades?
Well, last year I had an athlete that did Two Oceans quite hard. And yeah, we took a 2 weeks, really 1 week completely rest and then 1 week like a taper week building back towards the training again. And yeah, she was fully recovered then at Comrades, but still, you have to really rest up that first week. And she did a lot of Epsom salt baths. And just to get those legs all recovered and feeling good. And she did a little bike as well, but not hard, just 30 minutes every second day just to get the blood flowing. So to recover, you have to get the blood flowing quicker again, so but not through running because you're going to do more damage than good. So I am I like the bike, so I would always recommend going on the bike for recovery. just to speed up the recovery. And then, second week, going back to type a week that you did the week before Oceans. And then from there on, progress slowly into your training program and just doing that first week, that will be now the third week, not doing 10 long run or mileage, just slowly build back from how you taper down. You go opposite back again from taper, then the week before you taper it, and then you build back. That's how I would suggest it. And then she was fine at Comrades again. But I think all athletes differ, that it's what worked for her. And I can't talk out of experience because I have never done Comrades. So she was kind of my guinea pig towards doing both races. But if I would do it, I would do it the same. But I don't know if the way I race, I would be recovered for Comrades. So that I will see in the coming years when I once decide, when I get enough courage to do Comrades.
And Yvette, going back to Oceans quickly, what would you recommend to athletes out there in terms of what training should you be doing in the last 2 weeks before a race like Two Oceans? So what sessions should you be doing, and how should you be prepared?
Well, I listened to Carla as well. She doesn't like a really taper. That was quite interesting to me. I thought she would really do a taper, but I think it all comes down again. It depends from person to person and what they prefer. But for me, I'm already this weekend, my long runs were already, it's now 3 weeks out. And when this podcast comes out, it's going to be 2 weeks out. So I'm already doing less mileage. So just to get the body ready for the torture it's going to have to go through in a few weeks' time. So definitely last 2 weeks is not hard training anymore, especially going into 10 days before the race. Then you should be doing maybe one speedy session. Your heel sessions has to be done by now. You can still maybe run your last long run a bit heely, but not too much heely. And it shouldn't be more than, for me, it's not more than hour 10, my long run. So it can maybe be for other runner a bit further if they want to still hit like an 18K run or something. But for me, it's 70 minutes. That's like the longest run within those last 10 days. And just getting those legs a bit speedy. So I'll do a few 1 minute intervals, not too many of them, just 10 of them with 1 minute rest, just to get the legs a bit faster than they were this last few weeks, and just keep them alive. Basically, you don't want to do nothing, because doing nothing can also backfire a bit on you. So just doing less, but still getting the legs fired up.
Thanks, Yvette. I think that's some great points you've got there. And again, it's such an individual thing, this taper. I mean, rightly said, Carla doesn't like a big taper. I mean, for you, 70 minutes is the equivalent of what a lot of runners would take, an hour and a half plus to cover on an easy, long, slow run. So it's not that they need to just do 60 minutes as their long run and, you know, cover 8Ks and be okay. You're still trying to keep the legs alive. You're still trying to keep your body in shape, but you're just decreasing the volume. So again, I think it depends to you as an individual. If you were someone that was doing a large volume of training, then you're toning it down on that. I like to almost think about it as like a percentage. So if I'm like 4 weeks out at 100%, then I'm slowly thinning it away, like 75%, 60%, 50%, and then, you know, it's race week. And it's a nice way to sort of bring that down. And from a perspective of intensity, if you're doing a lot of hills, if you're doing a lot of quality sessions, then you're also bringing the intensity of those sessions and the amount of quality volume per se down. But again, it's individual. You need to know how your body handles, and you got to try it all. So it's interesting to hear how you guys as elite level athletes also have different ways of doing it, and how you recover. It all depends on how race day goes. If you're someone that breaks yourself down completely and you're crawling across that finish line, that recovery is going to take a lot longer than someone that just dawdles through the finish line smiling happily and they're already walking around Cape Town the next day. So I think that really makes a big difference individually. But personally, the last 2 weeks for me, is such a big mental side to it, because you know, your training decreases. So like you were talking about, you know, you feel like you're losing form, you feel like you're losing shape, both from a nutritional perspective, but also from a fitness perspective. It's like this mental thing where you're not losing fitness, but you just don't feel like you are pushing your body anymore. So it's a tricky situation mentally. And then going into a race, like we started a conversation, the fact that it is such a mental battle out there, it is such a, it's tough to go out at Two Oceans and have your best day out there. And in those last 2 weeks, the mental preparation, it's where I use it to, you know, look at that route, start to become acquainted with what my plan is going to be, start to think about the pace that I'm going to go out at, see what that feels like. What would you say from a mental perspective are good strategies for athletes to work on in the weeks leading up to a massive ultra marathon like the Two Oceans?
Yeah, it's definitely, you can look at your pace charts and see what paces you are capable of doing and have a plan A, B, and C. Usually I just have a plan A and then plan B is survival. So that's the two plans I have. I don't even have a backup plan B times. It's just going for survival. So that's the two plans I'm going for. But yeah, it's just reassuring yourself that the training is done. Don't panic now and do panic training, because that's the worst thing you can do. It's panic training is a no-go. It's like, don't try and get fit the last 10 days. That's not going to work. You have done the training and just reassure yourself. That's basically all that you can do. If you're elite, if you're just an amateur runner, if you're just going for a finish, we're going through the same, because I also get stressed. I also, I'm like counting the days and I'm like wishing it's further, but I want to run. And yeah, it's that emotions that you have to deal with, and just like trying to compartmentalize it and just putting it in boxes and just saying it will be okay, check the boxes and just move on. Keep yourself busy, keep your mind busy. Don't think of the race too often, because for me, it sucks me out a bit. I don't like thinking about the race too often. If I'm like, I put time aside, then I'll think of the race and recap and what my plan is. But for the rest of the day, I keep busy with my kids. I try my best not to think about it, because that's when anxiety builds up and I tend to get a bit of panic attacks as the race progresses and gets like closer to the time. And for me, it's not avoiding the situation. It's just like taking my mind off what is coming for the majority of the day. It helps me just cope, because for me it's a big deal to run the race, and for other people it's also a big deal. But it's just like just trying to juggle it all and not overthink it, basically.
For sure.
Eventually you said don't try and get fit in the last 10 days, but now what if I'm going to the doctor on the 1st of April and he gives me the all clear? Is 14 days enough time? No. So you wouldn't recommend that? Okay.
Davey, no, I've looked at your cycling. No, definitely not.
Are you saying my cycling is not good either?
It's not good enough to run to Oceans Ultra. If you want to do the half, yes. But for the Ultra, you had to do a little bit more cycling.
Okay, that's very concerning.
Get a half entry. I will fully support you on the half, but not on the Ultra. You're not ready for that. Sorry. You're going to be ready for Comrades, but the Ultra,
you're going to break your foot again.
Your hourglass has run out.
Okay. No, I respect that. And I'll take that advice. But then, Yvette, also, so Tommy, for me, you know, Two Oceans it's two things. It's the most beautiful marathon and ultra marathon that I've ever done. Obviously, Comrades is special, but in a different way. Comrades isn't necessarily beautiful. It's actually quite disturbing at certain points along the route. But Two Oceans is genuinely just absolutely beautiful. So Do you allow the beauty of the race to sort of, you know, take your mind off of things, and do you take in that beauty? And then also at the same time, it's, for me, it's also one of the best supported races that I've ever seen. So do you interact with the crowds, and do you let the crowds and the beauty of the race, you know, get you to that distraction to take you away from the pain?
I think I've glanced in 2022 once at the sea, and I thought, wow, that's nice. And I never looked at anything again. So that was like a second view. But yeah, the crowd is really encouraging, especially when they're screaming the whole time for Gerda. that is what I got in 2022. And then only when I took the lead, they start screaming my name. So I was like, damn it, didn't they know I was a South African? So yeah, that was quite torture, that first bit that they were just like rooting for her. And I'm like thinking, between all the Africans running here, I'm like, I'm also like actually a home girl here. But anyway, so yeah, the crowds was nice when I was taking the lead, but a little bit frustrating before that time. But yeah, it's definitely one of the most iconic races that we have, apart from Soweto. That's my other favorite. I think there's really a few people that like Soweto Marathon, but for me it's a special race. But yeah, the Oceans is a beautiful race, and it's really great to be part of it. I mean, the build-up towards it, the atmosphere on the day, on the start line, it's really being now have been like on the other side as well, and the supporting type of role. Either way, it's really nice to be part of the race. It's better running it, I must say. That's the best version to be part of. But yeah, both ways, it's quite amazing to just be there on the day and just be part of it.
I think, Yvette, you need to come with some like South African colored hair dye or South African colored glasses or just something to spice it up. I think the crowds would react well off of that, perhaps.
I think maybe
some arm sleeves.
Maybe Yvette needs to. Maybe you need to get Hollywood to brand your vest saying not Gerda on the front, and then Yvette on the back.
That will work. Another South African. I'm just going to brand myself another South African that they know. South African is also running here.
Oh, I'm sure this year they'll know, and they'll be looking out for you. I'm sure a lot of things have changed, and I think the South African running community is looking forward to having you racing the streets of Cape Town again. I know I certainly am, and I'm sure Davey will also enjoy supporting it from his bike, unfortunately. But Yvette, we've spoken a lot about the 56. You've of course won the 21. How many times? Three times, correct?
No, I checked. It was only twice. I lied about that one.
Okay, well, only twice. We're not going to talk to you about the 21 then.
I did seven halves. I did seven halves, but I only won the last two.
Okay.
Well, I think it was, no, I'm not going to say the years because maybe I'm going to get that wrong again, but it was twice. Yeah. But right. I've had a lot of, out of the seven, I've podiumed six times.
Well, why didn't you just say it that? We would have asked you about the 21 first.
Well, but it took me 5 years to win the 21, so I hope it's not going to take 5 years to win the 56.
Well, this year we're backing you all the way, Yvette. We're backing you all the way. But let's talk about the 21.
Thinking about it, it has taken 5 years because it's from 2019.
Well, hopefully then history will repeat itself in that regard. Yvette, the 21, just briefly, obviously the event when you were doing it was happening on the same day as the 56. Now it's a different day. It's on the Sunday, the 14th this year, whereas we haven't mentioned it, but obviously the 13th is the 56 Ultra. The 21K, tell us briefly about the 21K. What sort of route profile are you looking at, and how would you go about pacing that race in terms of like a strategy for someone that is running the half marathon at Two Oceans?
So I get asked this question quite a lot, and everyone thinks it's the most beautiful half, but unfortunately it isn't. You're not seeing the sea, you're on the other side, but it has changed since I've ran it, and it's now at least light while they run it. So it makes it a lot easier for the half marathon runners to see where they are running, because there was patches on that route where that was extremely dark, but now it has changed and it makes it much easier. But it has a lot of elevation in the half marathon. The half is one of the most difficult marathon or half marathons we have in South Africa. So when you approach it, don't think it's at sea level, it's going to be easy. It is one of the hardest half marathons that we have, and it already starts the climbs as you turn 1.5K in. So then you have already a long climb that you have to climb out. I think, if I can remember right, it's like a mile or almost 2Ks that you climb, and it's quite a steep uphill that you climb towards the end. But then you get rewarded with a nice long downhill, and it's nice smooth road, so there you can make up time. It's the same as in the ultra. You can't make up times with the hills. You can only make up times with the downhills. And then you have, that's the most easiest part you get, just after 3.5Ks. You get the nice downhill, then you climb off the highway, then you have like a nice flat bit that you can run, and there's a U-turn as well. But now seeing it that it's light, it's easy to make the U-turn. You don't have to watch your footing too much and etc. So then you go into the houses where you go just before you climb out Southern Cross. Southern Cross is the second hill that you climb out, and that's like the really tough one. That is the Constantia neck of the half. 21. So you're just climbing Constantia from a different side. But Southern Cross is long. It's a long uphill drag, and it's just after 11, then the race actually starts. So there's always important, if you want to take a gel, for me, I always take a gel there that I have enough energy for the rest that is coming. So, yeah, and then if you climb up Southern Cross, you then connect with the ultras route. So then you get like the same, like curvy bends. So keep on the high side, off the road, if possible, because sometimes it's not possible to run on the side, on the top, because there's many runners running and you can only run the space that you have. But it's important not to run on the lowest part of that curve, because that can trigger an ITB or maybe a niggle that you were suffering with in the approach towards the race. So that is important, just to mind the curve. But yeah, then it's the same. You get a nice drop, nice downhill that you can make up time and go fast, but then at that point you have to go full blast. Then you can spend all the money that's left. So yeah, from 15 on you can gas it. So I would say the race, really, you can, whatever reserves you had, you can spend it all there and just finish up there with the rolling hills. But yeah, it's important to just, in the race itself, the half marathon, the first 15K is hard. That is real, that you can't take away. The hills is there, but manage the hills just comfortably and ace the downhills, I would say.
Spend all the money.
Spend all the money. Oh, I mean, Yvette, you certainly sound like an absolute pro on both routes. I think if anybody is running the 21K, that is some golden advice. After 15Ks, just spend all that money, go wild. But we really are looking forward to seeing you smash the 56K on the 13th of April. Yes, it is 13th of April.
You got it right, bro. Well done.
My days are jumbled up because I'm on the baby clock. But we really, really can't wait to see you absolutely smash it. I'm going to be there on the sidelines at the ASIC supporters stand, giving you all the cheers. And I hope this year we see you coming in before Khada. It's just going to be so exciting to watch.
I don't think you can say that, though. You can't choose favorites.
Yvette, Davey has got a certain favorite. I'll tell you what, he speaks very highly of you. I think you're his most favorite person after Catherine, to be honest. I even don't top that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be lower ranked now. When that boy is born, yo, I'm going to be outside the top 10.
Do you know what, Yvette? If I was a betting man, I would put money on you taking the win this year. And that is not because you're already a friend of mine.
Oh, because I paid you to say it. No, I'm kidding.
And we know Davey likes to spend money out of his credit card, not his savings account. But Yvette, I just want to say thank you. Thank you so, so much for sharing all your knowledge and information. And as you mentioned it, you know, it's hard-earned knowledge. You've experienced it. You've been on that route. You've supported on that route. You've raced on that route. You've podiumed. You've had heartache. You've had success. So you know exactly what it takes. And, you know, we're just so fortunate to have someone of your pedigree to be able to chat to our listeners and give them the advice. If you have any parting advice for both 21K and 56K runners, what would you want to leave listeners with?
I just think if you're running to Oceans and you put in the work, you know the sacrifices you did for it. If you're elite, if you're amateur, if you're just going there to finish the race, it was weekends that you put out and planned out to do your half marathon training, do your marathon training, do your ultra, get your ultra distances in that you had to qualify for. Remember that when you're running. It's the sacrifices that you put in for that race. Use it as your motivation on the day to smash your PB.
Beautiful. That's the motivation people need for sure. Thank you so much, Yvette. We wish you all the best. We look forward to seeing you race on the 13th of April this year. And we want to just wish all of our listeners have a fantastic Total Sports Two Oceans Marathon this year. Thank you for listening to another episode of Making a Runner. We hope you enjoyed it and found value in the show. Don't forget to rate and leave a review on your favorite streaming platform. And remember to share with your running buddies.
Follow our journey on our socials and feel free to engage with us on all things running. We wish you a pleasant run, wherever the road or trail may take you. Bye for now.